Welcome to a continuation of the Discourses upon the Existence and Attributes of God by Stephen Charnock, Volume 2, Part 33. This Reformation audio resource is a production of Stillwater's Revival Books. Many free resources, as well as our complete mail order catalogue containing classic and contemporary Puritan and Reformed books, CDs, and much more, at great discounts, are on the web at www.swrb.com. Also, please consider, pray and act upon the important truths found in the following quotation by Charles Spurgeon. As the apostle says to Timothy, so also he says to everyone, give yourself to reading. He who will not use the thoughts of other men's brains proves that he has no brains of his own. You need to read. Renounce as much as you will all like literature, but study as much as possible sound theological works, especially the Puritanic writers and expositions of the Bible. The best way for you to spend your leisure is to be either reading or praying. And now to SWRB's reading of Charnock, which we hope you find to be a great blessing, and which we pray draws you nearer to the Lord Jesus Christ. For he is the way, the truth, and the life, and no man cometh unto the Father but by him. John 14, verse 6. Secondly, the sovereignty of God is contemned in the practices of men. One, when laws are made and urged in any state contrary to the law of God. It is part of God's sovereignty to be a lawgiver. Not to obey his law is a breach made upon his right or government, but it is treason in any against the crown of God to make laws with a stamp contrary to that of heaven, whereby they renounce their due subjection and vie with God for dominion, snatch the supremacy from him, and account themselves more lords than the sovereign monarch of the world. When men will not let God be the judge of good and evil, but put in their own vote, controlling his to establish their own, such are not content to be as God, subordinate to be to the supreme God, to sit at his feet, nor coordinate with him to sit equal upon his throne, but paramount to him, to overtop and shadow his crown. A boldness that leaves the serpent, in the first temptation, under the character of a more commendable modesty, who advised our first parents to attempt to be as gods, but not above him, and would enervate a law of God, but not enact a contrary one to be observed by them. Such was the usurpation of Nebuchadnezzar to set up a golden image to be adored, Daniel 3, as if he had power to mint gods, as well as to conquer men, to set the stamp of a deity upon a piece of gold, as well as his own effigies upon his current coin. Much of the same nature was that of Darius, by the motion of his flatterers, to prohibit any partition to be made to God for the space of 30 days, as though God was not to have a worship without a license from a doting piece of clay. Daniel 6:7. So Henry III of France, by his edict, silenced masters of families from praying with their households. And it is a further contempt of God's authority when good men are oppressed by the sole weight of power for not observing such laws, as if they had a real sovereignty over the consciences of men more than God himself. When the apostles were commanded by an angel from God to preach in the temple the doctrine of Christ, Acts 5:19-20, they were fetched from thence with a guard from the council, verse 6. And what is the language of these statesmen to them? As absolute as God himself could speak to any transgressors of his law. Did not we straitly command you that you should not teach in this name? Verse 28. It is sufficient that we give you a command to be silent and publish no more this doctrine of Jesus. It is not for you to examine our decrees, but rest in our order as loyal subjects, and comply with your rulers. They might have added, though it be with the damnation of your souls. How would those overrule the apostles? By no other reason but their absolute pleasure. and though God had espoused their cause by delivering them out of the prison wherein they had locked them the day before, yet not one of all this council had the wit or honesty to entitle it a fighting against God, but Gamaliel, verse 29. So foolishly fond are men to put themselves in the place of God, and usurp a jurisdiction over men's consciences, and to presume that laws made against the interest and command of God must be of more force than the laws of God's enacting. 2. The sovereignty of God is contemned in making additions to the laws of God. The authority of a sovereign lawgiver is invaded and vilified when an inferior presumes to make orders equivalent to his edicts. It is a presumption against heaven to set up an authority distinct from that of God, or to enjoin anything as necessary in matter of worship, for which a divine commission cannot be shown. God was always so tender of this part of his prerogative, that he would not have anything wrought in the tabernacle, not a vessel, not an instrument, but what himself had prescribed. According to all that I show thee, after the pattern of the tabernacle, and the pattern of all the instruments thereof, even so shall ye make it. Exodus 25:9, which is strictly urged again, verse 40. Look that thou make them after their pattern. Look to it. Beware of doing anything of thine own head, and justling with my authority. It was so afterwards in the matter of the temple, which succeeded the tabernacle. God gave the model of it to David, and made him understand it in writing by his hand upon him, even all the works of this pattern. 1 Corinthians 28:19. Neither the royal authority in Moses, who was king in Jeshurun, nor in David, who was a man after God's own heart, and called to the crown by a special and extraordinary providence, nor Aaron and the high priest's successors, invested in the sacerdotal office, had any authority from God to do anything in the framing the tabernacle or temple of their own heads. God barred them from anything of that nature by giving them an exact pattern. So dear to him was always this flower of his crown. And afterwards the power of appointing officers and ordinances in the church was delegated to Christ, and was among the rest of those royalties given to him, which he fully completed for the edifying of the body. Ephesians 4:11-12. And he hath the eulogy by the Spirit of God to be faithful as Moses was in all his house to him that appointed him. Hebrews 3:2. Faithfulness in a trust implies a punctual observing directions. God was still so tender of this that even Christ, the Son, should no more do anything in this concern without appointment and pattern than Moses, a servant, verse 5 and 6. It seems to be a vote of nature to refer the original of the modes of all worship to God, and therefore in all those varieties of ceremonies among the heathens, there were scarce any but were imagined by them to be the dictates and orders of some of their pretended deities, and not the results of mere human authority. What intrusion upon God's right hath the papacy made in regard of officers, cardinals, patriarchs, etc., not known in any divine order? In regard of ceremonies in worship, pressed as necessary to obtain the favour of God, holy water, crucifixes, altars, images, cringings, reviving many of the Jewish and pagan ceremonies and adopting them into the family of Christian ordinances, as if God had been too absolute and arbitrary in repealing the one and dashing in pieces the other. When God had by his sovereign order framed a religion for the heart, men are ready to usurp an authority to frame one for the sense, to dress the ordinance of God in new and gaudy habits to take the eye by a vain pomp, thus affecting a divine royalty and acting a silly childishness, and after this to impose the observation of those upon the consciences of men is a bold ascent into the throne of God, to impose laws upon the conscience which Christ has not imposed, hath deservedly been thought the very spirit of Antichrist. It may be called also the spirit of anti-God. God hath reserved to himself the sole sovereignty over the conscience, and never indulged men any part of it. He hath not given man a power over his own conscience, much less one man a power over another's conscience. Men have a power over outward things to do this or that, where it is determined by the law of God, but not the least authority to control any dictate or determination of conscience. The sole empire of that is appropriate to God, as one of the great marks of his royalty. What an usurpation it is of God's right to make conscience a slave to man, which God has solely, as the Father of spirits, subjected to himself. An usurpation which, though the apostles, those extraordinary officers, might better have claimed, yet they utterly disowned any imperious dominion over the faith of others. 2 Corinthians 1:24. Though in this they do not seem to climb up above God, yet they set themselves in the throne of God, envy him an absolute monarchy, would be sharers with him in his legislative power, and grasp one end of his scepter in their own hands. They do not pretend to take the crown from God's head, but discover a bold ambition to shuffle their hairy scalps under it, and wear part of it upon their own, that they may rule with him, not under him, and would be joint lords of his manor with him, who hath by the apostle forbidden any to be lords of his heritage. 1 Peter 5:3. And therefore they cannot assume such an authority to themselves, till they can show where God has resigned this part of his authority to them. If their exposition of that place, Matthew 16:18, upon this rock I will build my church, be granted to be true, and that the person and successors of Peter are meant by that rock, it could be no apology for their usurpations. It is not Peter and his successors shall build, but I will build. Others are instruments in building, but they are to observe the directions of the grand architect. 3. The sovereignty of God is contemned when men prefer obedience to men's laws before obedience to God. As God hath an undoubted right, as the lawgiver and ruler of the world, to enact laws without consulting the pleasure of men, or requiring their consent to the verifying and establishing his edicts, so are men obliged by their allegiance to subjects to observe the laws of their Creator, without consulting whether they be agreeable to the laws of his revolted creatures. To consult with flesh and blood whether we should obey is to authorize flesh and blood above the purest and most sovereign spirit. When men will obey their superiors without taking in the condition the apostle prescribes to servants, Colossians 3:2, in singleness of heart, fearing God, and postpone the fear of God to the fear of man, it is to render God of less power with them than at the drop of a bucket or dust of the balance. When we, out of fear of punishment, would observe the laws of men against the laws of God, it is like the Egyptians to worship a ravenous crocodile instead of a deity. When we submit to human laws and stagger at divine, it is to set man upon the throne of God and God at the footstool of man, to set man above and God beneath, to make him the tail and not the head, as God speaks in another case of Israel, Deuteronomy 28:13. When we pay an outward observation to divine laws, because they are backed by the laws of man, and human authority is the motive of our observance, we subject God's sovereignty to man's authority. What he hath from us is more owing to the pleasure of men than any value we have for the empire of God. When men shall commit murders and imbrue their hands in blood by the order of a grandee, when the worst sins shall be committed by the order of papal dispensations, when the use of his creatures, which God hath granted and sanctified, shall be abstained from for so many days in the week and so many weeks in the year, because of a Roman edict, the authority of man is acknowledged, not only equal, but superior to that of God. The dominion of dust and clay is preferred before the undoubted right of the sovereign of the world. The commands of God are made less than human, and the orders of men more authoritative than divine, and the grand rebel's usurpation of God's right is countenanced. When men are more devout in observance of uncertain traditions or mere human inventions than at the hearing of the unquestionable oracles of God, when men shall squeeze their countenances into a more serious figure and benign themselves in a more religious posture at the appearance of some mock ceremony clothed in a Jewish or pagan garb, which hath unhappily made a rent in the coat of Christ, and a pay a more exact reverence to that which hath no divine, but only a human stamp upon it, than to the clear and plain word of God, which is perhaps neglected with sleepy nods, or which is worse, entertained with profane scoffs. This is to prefer the authority of man employed in trifles before the authority of the wise lawgiver of the world. Besides, the ridiculousness of it is as great as to adore a glowworm and laugh at the sun, or for a courtier to be more exact in his cringes and starched postures before a puppet than before his sovereign prince. In all this we make not the will and authority of God our rule, but the will of man. To disclaim our dependence on God, to hang upon the uncertain breath of a creature. In all this God is made less than man, and man more than God. God is deposed, and man enthroned. God made a slave, and man a sovereign above him. To this we may refer the solemn addresses of some for the maintenance of the Protestant religion according to law, the law of man, not so much minding the law of God, resolving to make the law, the church, the state, the rule of their religion, and change that if the laws be changed, steering their opinions by the compass of the magistrate's judgment and interest. 2. The dominion of God as a proprietor is practically contemned. 1. By envy. When we are not flush and gay, as well spread and sparkling as others, this passion gnaws our souls, and we become the executioners to rack ourselves, because God is the executor of his own pleasure. The foundation of this passion is a quarrel with God. To envy others the enjoyment of their propriety is to envy God his right of disposal, and consequently the propriety of his own goods. It is a mental theft committed against God. We rob him of his right in our will and wish. It is a robbery to make ourselves equal with God when it is not our due, which is implied, Philippians 2:6, when Christ is said, to think it no robbery to be equal with God. We would wrest the scepter out of his hand, wish he were not the conductor of the world, and that he would resign his sovereignty and the right of the distribution of his own goods to the caprices of our humour, and ask our leave to what subjects he should dispense his favours. All envy is either a tacit accusation of God as a usurper, and assuming a right to dispose of that which does not belong to him, and so it is a denial of his propriety, or else charges him with a blind or unjust distribution, and so it is a bespattering his wisdom and righteousness. When God doth punish envy, he vindicates his own sovereignty, as though this passion chiefly endeavoured to blast this perfection. Ezekiel 25:11-12. As I live, saith the Lord, I will do according to thy anger, and according to thy envy, and thou shalt know that I am the Lord. The sin of envy in the devils was immediately against the crown of God, and so was the sin of envy in the first man, envying God the sole prerogative in knowledge above himself. This base humour in Cain, at the preference of Abel's sacrifice before his, was a cause that he deprived him of his life, denying God first his right of choice and what he should accept, and then invading God's right of propriety in usurping a power over the life and being of his brother, which solely belonged to God. 2. The dominion of God as a proprietor is practically contemned by a violent or surreptitious taking away from any what God hath given him the possession of. Since God is the Lord of all, and may give the possession and dominion of things to whom he pleaseth, all theft and purloining, all cheating and cozening another of his right, is not only a crime against the true possessor, depriving him of what he is entrusted with, but against God, as the absolute and universal proprietor, having a right thereby to confer his own goods upon whom he pleases, as well as against God as a lawgiver, forbidding such a violence. The snatching away what is another's denies man the right of possession, and God the right of donation. The Israelites, taking the Egyptian jewels, had been theft, had it not been by divine license and order, but cannot be slandered with such a term, after the proprietor of the whole world had altered the title and alienated them by his positive grant from the Egyptians to confer them upon the Israelites. 3. The dominion of God as a proprietor is practically contemned by not using what God hath given us for those ends for which he gave them to us. God passeth things over to us with a condition to use that for his glory which he hath bestowed upon us by his bounty. He is Lord of the end for which he gives, as well as Lord of what he gives. The donor's right of propriety is infringed when the lands and legacy he leaves to a particular use are not employed to those ends to which he bequeathed them. The right of the lord of a manor is violated when the copyhold is not used according to the condition of the conveyance. So it is an invasion of God's sovereignty not to use the creatures for those ends for which we are entrusted with them. When we deny ourselves a due and lawful support from them, hence covetousness is an invasion of his right, or when we unnecessarily waste them, hence prodigality disowns his property, or when we bestow not anything upon the relief of others, hence uncharitableness comes under the same title, appropriating that to ourselves, as if we were the lords, when we were but the usufructuaries for ourselves and stewards for others. This is to be rich to ourselves, not to God. Luke 12:21. For so are they who employ not their wealth for the service, according to the intent of the donor. Thus the Israelites did not own God, the true proprietor of their corn, wine, and oil, which God had given them for his worship, when they prepared offerings for Baal out of his stock. For she did not know that I gave her corn and wine and oil, and multiplied her gold and silver, which they prepared for Baal. Hosea 2:8. As if they had been sole proprietors, and not factors by commission, to improve the goods for the true owner. It is the same invasion of God's right to use the parts and gifts that God hath given us, either as fuel for our pride, or advancing self, or a witty scoffing at God and religion, when we use not religion for the honour of our sovereign, but a stool to rise by, and observe his precepts outwardly, not out of regard to his authority, but as a stale for our interest, and furnishing self with a little concern and trifle. When men will wrest his word for the favour of their lusts, which God intended for the checking of them, and make interpretations of it according to their humours, and not according to his will discovered in the Scripture, this is to pervert the use of the best goods and deposit he hath put into our hands, even divine revelations. Thus hypocrisy makes the sovereignty of God a nullity. 3. The dominion of God as a governor is practically contemned. 1. In idolatry. Since worship is an acknowledgement of God's sovereignty, to adore any creature instead of God, or to pay anything that homage of trust and confidence which is due to God, though it be the highest creature in heaven or earth, is to acknowledge that sovereignty to pertain to a creature which is challenged by God, as to set up the greatest lord in a kingdom in the government instead of the lawful prince is rebellion and usurpation. And that woman incurs the crime of adultery who commits it with a person of great port and honour, as well as with one of a mean condition. While men create anything a god, they own themselves supreme above the true God, yea, and above that which they account a god. For by the right of creation, they have a superiority, as it is a deity blown up by the breath of their own imagination. The authority of God is in this sin acknowledged to belong to an idol. It is called loathing of God as a husband, Ezekiel 16:45. All the authority of God as a husband and Lord over them, so when we make anything of any or any person in the world the chief object and prop of our trust and confidence, we act the same part. Trust in an idol is the formal part of idolatry. So is everyone that trusts in them. Psalm 115:8, i.e. in idols. What sort of thing we make the object of our trust, we rear as an idol. It is not unlawful to have the image of a creature, but to bestow divine adoration upon it. It was not unlawful for the Egyptians to possess and use oxen, but to dub them gods to be adored it was. It is not unlawful to have wealth and honour, nor to have gifts and parts. They are the presence of God. But to love them above God, to fix our reliance upon them more than upon God, is to rob God of his due, who being our creator, ought to be our confidence. What we want, we are to desire of him and expect from him. When we confide in anything else, we deny God the glory of his creation. We disown him to be Lord of the world, imply that our welfare is in the hands of and depends upon that thing wherein we confide. It is not only to equal it to God in sovereign power, which is his own phrase, Isaiah 40:25, but to prefer it before him in a reproach of him. When the hosts of heaven shall be served instead of the Lord of those hosts, when we shall lucky after the stars depend barely upon their influences, without looking up to the great director of the sun, it is to pay an adoration unto a captain in a regiment which is due to the general. When we shall make gold our hope, and say to the fine gold, thou art my confidence, it is to deny the supremacy that God, of that God that is above, as well as if we kiss our hands in a way of adoration to the sun in its splendor, or the moon walking in its brightness. For Job couples them together, chapter 31, 25-28. It is to prefer the authority of earth before that of heaven, and honor clay above the sovereign of the world, as if a soldier should confide more in the rag of an ensign, or the fragment of a drum, for his safety, than in the orders and conduct of his general. It were as much as is in his power to uncommission him, and snatch from him his commander's staff. When we advance the creature in our love above God, and the altar of our soul smokes with more thoughts and affections to a petty interest than to God, we lift up that which was given us as a servant in the place of the sovereign, and bestow that throne upon it which is to be kept undefiled for the rightful Lord, and subject the interest of God to the demands of the creature. So much respect is due to God, that none should be placed in the throne of our affections equal with him, much less anything to peak above him. 2. Impatience is a contempt of God as a governor. When we meet with rubs in the way of any design, when our expectations are crossed, we will break through all obstacles to accomplish our projects, whether God will or no. When we are too much dejected at some unexpected providence, and murmur at the instruments of it, as if God divested himself of his prerogative of conducting human affairs. When a little cross blows us into a mutiny and swells us into a sauciness to implead God or make us fret against him, as the expression is, Isaiah 8:21, wishing him out of his throne, no sin is so devilish as this. There is not any strike more at all the attributes of God than this, against his goodness, righteousness, holiness, wisdom, and doth as little spare his sovereignty as any of the rest. What can it be else but an impious invasion of his dominion, to quarrel with him for what he doth, and to say, what reason hast thou to deal thus with me? This language is in the nature of all impatience, whereby we question his authority, his sovereignty, and parallel our dominion with his. When men have not that confluence of wealth or honor they greedily desired, they bark at God and revile his government. Their angry God does not respectfully observe them, as though he had nothing to do in their matters, and were wanting in that becoming reverence which they think him bound to pay to such great ones as they are. They would have God obedient to their minds, and at nothing but what he receives a commission for from their wills. When we murmur, it is as if we would command his will, and wear his crown, arresting the scepter out of his hand to sway it ourselves. We deny him the right of government, disown his power over us, and would be our own sovereigns. You may find the character of it in the language of Jehoram, as many understand it. Behold, this evil is of the Lord. What should I wait for the Lord any longer? 2 Kings 6:33. This is an evil of such a nature that it could come from none but the hand of God. Why should I attend upon him as my sovereign that delights to do me so much mischief, that throws curses upon me when I expected blessings? I will no more observe his directions, but follow my own sentiments, and regard not his authority in the lips of his doting prophet. The same you find in the Jews, when they were under God's lash. And they said, there is no hope, but we will walk after our own devices, and we will everyone do the imagination of his evil heart. Jeremiah 18:12. We can expect no good from him, and therefore we will be our own sovereigns and prefer the authority of our own imaginations before that of his precepts. Men would be their own carvers and not suffer God to use his right. As if a stone should order the mason in what manner to hew it and in what part of the building to place it. We are not ordinarily concerned so much at the calamities of our neighbours, but swell against heaven at the light drop upon ourselves. We are content God should be the sovereign of others, so that he will be a servant to us. Let him deal as he will himself with others, so he will treat us and what relates to us as we will ourselves. We would have God resign his authority to our humours, and our humours should be in the place of God to him, to direct him what was fit to do in our course. When things go not according to our vote. Our impatience is a wish that God was disposed from his throne, that he would surrender his seat to some that would deal more favourably and be more punctual observers of our directions. Let us look to ourselves in regard of this sin, which is too common, and the root of much mischief. This seems to be the first bubbling of Adam's will. He was not content with the condition wherein God had placed him, but affected another, which ended in the ruin of himself and mankind. Limiting God in his way of working to our methods is another part of the contempt of his dominion. When we will prescribe him methods of acting, that he should deliver us in this or that way, we would not suffer him to be the Lord of his own favours and have the privilege to be his own director. When we will limit him to such a time wherein to work our deliverance, we would rob him of the power of times and seasons, which is solely in his hand. We would regulate his conduct according to our imaginations, and assume a power to give laws to our sovereign. Thus the Israelites limited the Holy One of Israel, Psalm 78:41. They would control his absolute dominion, and of a sovereign make him their slave. Man that is God's vassal should set bounds to his Lord and cease to be a servant and a commenced master when he would give, not take, directions from him. When God had given them manna and their fancies were weary of that delicious food, they would prescribe heaven to rain down some other sort of food for them. When they wanted no sufficient provision in the wilderness, they quarreled with God for bringing them out of Egypt, and not presently giving them a place of seed, of figs, vines, and pomegranates, Numbers 20, verse 5, which is called a striving with the Lord, verse 13, a contending with him for his lordship. When we tempt God, and require a sign of him as a mark of his favour, we circumscribe his dominion. When we will not use the means he had appointed, but rather our laziness upon a trust in his providence, as if we expected he would work a miracle for our relief, when we censure him for what he hath done in the course of his providence. When we capitulate with him and promise such a service, if he will do us such a turn, good turn, according to our platform, we would bring down his sovereign pleasure to our will. We invade his throne and expect a submissive obedience from him. Man that hath not wit enough to govern himself would be governing God, and those that cannot be their own sovereigns affect a sovereignty over heaven. Pride and presumption is another invasion of his dominion. When men will resolve to go tomorrow to such a city, to such a fair and market, to traffic and get gain, without thinking of the necessity of a divine license, as if ourselves were the lords of our time and of our lives, and God were to lackey after us, James 4:13-15, ye that say, today we will go into such a city and buy and sell, whereas ye ought to say, if the Lord will, we shall live, as if they had a freehold, and were not tenants at will to the lord of the manor. When we presume upon our own strength or wit to get the better of our adversaries, as the Germans, as Tacitus relates, assured themselves by the numerousness of their army of a victory against the Romans, and prepared chains to fetter the captives before the conquest, which were found in their camp after their defeat, when we are peremptory in expectations of success according to our will, as Pharaoh, Exodus 15:9, I will pursue, and I will overtake, I will divide the spoil, my lust shall be satisfied upon them, I will draw my sword, my hand shall destroy them. He speaks more like a god than a man, as if he were the sovereign power, and God only his vicar and lieutenant. How he struts without thinking of a superior power to curb him. When men ascribe to themselves what is the sole fruit of God's sovereign pleasure, as the king of Assyria speaks a language fit only to be spoken of by God, Isaiah 10:13-14, etc. I have removed the bounds of the people. My hand hath found as a nest the riches of the people. I have gathered all the earth, which God declares to be a wrong to his sovereignty, by the title wherewith he prefaceth his threatening against him. Verse 16. Therefore shall the Lord of hosts, send among his fat ones leanness, etc. It is indeed a rifling, if not of his crown, yet of the most glittering jewel of it, his glory. He that mocks the poor reproacheth his maker. Proverbs 17:5. He never thinks that God made them poor and himself rich. He owns not his riches to be dropped upon him by the divine hand. Self is a great invader of God's sovereignty. Doth not only spurn at it, but usurp it, and assume divine honors, payable only to the universal sovereign. The Assyrian was not so modest as a Chaldean, who would impute his power and victories to his idol, Habakkuk 1:11, whom he thought to be God, though yet robbing the true God of his authority. And so much was signified by their names, Nebuchadnezzar, Evil Merodach, Belshazzar, Nebo, Merodach, Bel, being the Chaldean idols, and the names signifying Lord of Wealth, Giver of Riches, and the like. When we behave ourselves proudly towards others, and imagine ourselves greater than our Maker ever meant us, when we would give laws to others, and expect the most submissive observances from them, as if God had resigned his authority to us, and made us, in his stead, the rightful monarchs of the world. To disdain that any creature should be above us is to disdain God's sovereign disposition of men, and consequently his own superiority over us. A proud man would govern all, and would not have God his sovereign, but his subject. To overvalue ourselves is to undervalue God. 5. Slight and careless worship of God is another contempt of his sovereignty. A prince is contemned not only by a neglect of those reverential postures which are due to him, but in a reproachful and scornful way of paying them. To behave ourselves uncomely or immodestly before a prince is a disesteem of his majesty. Sovereignty requires awe in every address. Where this is wanting, there is a disrespect of authority. We contemn God's dominion when we give him the service of the lip, the hand, the knee, and deny him that of the heart. As they in Ezekiel 33:31, as though he were the sovereign only of the body and not of the soul. To have devout figures of the face and uncomely postures of the soul is to exclude his dominion from our spirits while we own it only over our outward man. We render him an insignificant lord, not worthy of any higher adorations from us than a senseless statue. We demean not ourselves according to his majestical authority over us, when we present him not with the cream and quintessence of our souls. The greatness of God required a great house and a costly palace. 1 Chronicles 29, verse 11 and 16. God speaks it in order to the building God a house. David speaks it in order to the building God a house and a temple. God, being a great king, expects a male, the best of our flock. Malachi 1:14, a masculine and vigorous service. When we present him with a sleepy, sickly, rheumatic service, we betray our conceptions of him to be as mean as if he were a petty lord, whose dominion were of no larger extent than a molehill or some inconsiderable village. 6. Omission of the service he hath appointed is another contempt of his sovereignty. This is a contempt of his dominion, whereby he hath a right to appoint what means and conditions he pleaseth for the enjoyment of his profit and promised benefits. It is an enmity to his sceptre not to accept his terms after a long series of precepts and invitations made for the restoring us to that happiness we have lost, and providing all means necessary thereunto, nothing being wanting but our own concurrence with it, and acceptance of it by rendering that easy homage he requires. By withholding from him the service he enjoins, we deny that we hold anything of him. As he that pays not the quick rent, though it never be so small, disowns the sovereignty of the lord of the manor, it implies that he is a miserable poor lord, having no right or destitute of any power to dispose of anything in the world to our advantage. Job 22:17. They say unto God, depart from us. What can the Almighty do for them? They will have no commerce with him in a way of duty, because they imagine him to have no sovereign power to do anything for them in a way of benefit, as if his dominion were an empty title, and as much destitute of any authority to command a favour for them as any idol. They think themselves to have as absolute a disposal of things as God himself. What can he do for us? What can he confer upon us that we cannot invest ourselves in, as though they were sovereigns in an equality with God? Thus men live without God in the world, Ephesians 2:12, as if there were no supreme being to pay a respect to, or none fit to receive any homage at their hands, withholding from God the right of his time and the right of his service, which is a just claim of his sovereignty. 7. Censuring others is a contempt of his sovereignty. When we censure men's persons or actions by a rash judgment, when we will be judges of the good and evil of men's actions, where the law of God is utterly silent, we usurp God's place and invade his right. We claim a superiority over the law and judge God defective as the lecturer of the world in his prescriptions of good and evil. James 4:11-12. He that speaks evil of his brother and judges his brother speaks evil of the law and judges the law. There is one lawgiver who is able to save and to destroy. Who art thou that judgest another? Do you know what you do in judging another? You take upon you the garb of a sovereign, as if he were more your servant than God's, and more under your authority than the authority of God. It is setting thyself in God's tribunal, and assuming his rightful power of judging. Thy brother is not to be governed by thy fancy, but by God's law and his own conscience. 2. Information. Hence it follows that God doth actually govern the world. He hath not only a right to rule, but he rules over all. So saith the text. He is King of kings and Lord of lords. What to let them do what they please, on all that their lusts prompt them to. Hath God an absolute dominion? It is good. And is it wise? Is it then a useless prerogative of the divine nature? Shall so excellent a power lie idle, as if God were a lifeless image? Shall we fancy God like some lazy monarch that soleth himself in the gardens of his palace, or steeps himself in some charming pleasures, and leaves his lieutenants to govern the several provinces, which are all members of his empire, according to their own humour? Not to exercise this dominion is all one as not to have it. To what purpose is he invested with his sovereignty, if he were careless of what were done in the world, and regarded not the oppressions of men? God keeps no useless excellency by him. He actually reigns over the heathen. Psalm 47:8, and those as bad are worse than heathens. It had been a vanity in David to call upon the heavens to be glad, and the earth to rejoice under the rule of a sleepy deity. 1 Chronicles 16:31. No. His scepter is full of eyes, and it was painted by the Egyptians. He is always waking, and always more than Ahasuerus, reading over the records of human actions. Not to exercise his authority is all one as not to regard whether he keep the crown upon his head, or continue the scepter in his hand. If his sovereignty were exempt from care, he would be destitute of justice. God is more righteous than to resign the ensigns of his authority to blind and oppressive man, to think that God hath a power and doth not use it for just and righteous ends, is to imagine him an unrighteous as well as a careless sovereign. Such a thing in a man renders him a base man and a worse governor. It is a vice that disturbs the world and overthrows the ends of authority, as to have a power and use it well is the greatest virtue of an earthly sovereign. What an unworthy conception is it of God to acknowledge him to be possessed of a greater authority than the greatest monarch, and yet to think that he uses it less than a petty lord, that his crown is of no more value with him than a feather. This represents God impotent, and that he cannot, or unrighteous and base, that he will not administer the authority he hath for the noblest and justest end. But can we say that he neglects the government of the world? How come things then to remain in their due order? How comes the law of nature yet to be preserved in every man's soul? How comes conscience to check and cite and judge? If God did not exercise his authority, what authority could conscience have to disturb man in the unlawful practices and to make his sports and sweetness so unpleasant and sour to him? Hath he not given frequent notices and memorials that he holds a curb over corrupt inclinations, puts rubs in the way of malicious attempters, and often oversets the disturbers of the peace of the world? 3. information. God can do no wrong since he is absolute sovereign. Man may do wrong, princes may oppress and rifle, but it is a crime in them so to do, because their power is a power of government and not a propriety in the goods or lives of their subjects. But God cannot do any wrong, whatsoever the clamors of creatures are, because he can do nothing but what he hath a sovereign right to do. If he takes away your goods, he takes not anything away anything that is yours more than his own, since though he entrusted you with them, he divested not himself of the propriety. When he takes away our lives, he takes what he gave us by a temporary donation, to be surrendered at his call. We can claim no right in anything but by his will. He is no debtor to us. And since he owes us nothing, he can wrong us in nothing that he takes away. His own sovereignty excuses him in all those acts which are most distasteful to the creature. If we crop a medicinal plant for our use, or a flower for our pleasure, or kill a lamb for our food, we do neither of them any wrong, because the original of them was for our use, and they had their life and nourishment and pleasing qualities for our delight and support. And are not we much more made for the pleasure and use of God than any of those can be for us? Of him, and to him are all things. Romans 9:36. Hath not God as much right over any one of us as over the meanest worm? Though there be a vast difference in nature between the angels in heaven and the worms on earth, yet they are all in regard of subjection to God. He is as much the Lord of the one as the other, as much the proprietor of the one as the other, as much the governor of the one as the other. Not a cranny in the world is exempt from his jurisdiction. Not a mite or grain of a creature exempt from his propriety. He is not our Lord by election. He was a Lord before we were in being. He had no terms put upon him who capitulated with him and set him in his throne by covenant. What oath did he take to any subject at his first investiture in his authority? His right is as natural, as eternal as himself, as natural as his existence, and as necessary as his deity. Hath he any law but his own will? What wrong can he do that breaks no law, that fulfills his law in everything he doth, by fulfilling his own will, which as it is absolutely sovereign, so it is infinitely righteous. In whatsoever he takes from us, then, he cannot injure us. It is no crime in any man to seize upon his own goods to vindicate his own honour. And shall it be thought a wrong in God to do such things besides the occasion he hath from every man and that every day provoking him to do it? He seems rather to wrong himself by forbearing such a seizure than wrong us by executing it. 4. Information. If God have a sovereignty over the whole world, then merit is totally excluded. His right is so absolute over all creatures that he neither is, nor can be, a debtor to any. Not to the undefiled holiness of the blessed angels, much less the poor earthly worms, those blessed spirits enjoy their glory by the title of his sovereign pleasure, not by virtue of any obligation devolving from them upon God. Are not the faculties whereby they and we perform any act of obedience his to grant to us? Is not the strength whereby they and we are enabled to do anything pleasing to him a gift from him? Can a vassal merit of his lord or a slave of his master by using his tools and employing his strength in his service, though it was a strength he had naturally, not by donation, from the man in whose service it is employed? God is Lord of all. All is due to him. How can we oblige him by giving him what is his own, more his to whom it is presented than ours by whom it is offered? He becomes not a debtor by receiving anything from us, but by promising something to us. 5. Information. If God hath a sovereign dominion over the whole world, then hence it follows that all magistrates are but sovereigns under God. He is King of kings and Lord of lords. All the potentates of the world are no other than his lieutenants, movable at his pleasure, and more at his disposal than their subjects are at theirs. Though they are dignified with the title of gods, yet still they are at an infinite distance from the Supreme Lord, gods under God, not to be above him, not to be against him. The want of the due sense of their subordination to God have made many in the world act as sovereigns above him, more than sovereigns under him. Had they all borne a deep conviction of this upon their spirits, such audacious language had never dropped from the mouth of Pharaoh. Who is the Lord that I should obey his voice to let Israel go? Exodus 5:2, presuming that there was no superior to control him, nor any in heaven able to be a match for him. Darius had never published such a doting edict as to prohibit any petition to God. Nero had never fired Rome and sung at the sight of the devouring flames, nor ever had he ripped up his mother's belly to see the womb where he first lodged and received a life so hateful to his country. Nor would Abner and Joab, the two generals, have accounted the death of men but a sport and interlude. Let the young men arise and play with us. 2 Samuel 2:14. What play it was, the next verse acquaints you with, thrusting their swords into one another's sides. They were no more troubled at the death of thousands than a man is to kill a fly or a flea. Had a sense of this but hovered over their souls, people in many countries had not been made their footballs and used worse than their dogs. Nor had the lives of millions, worth more than a world, been exposed to fire and sword to support some sordid lust or breach of faith upon an idle quarrel, and for the depredation of their neighbors' estates. The flames of cities had been brought, had not been so bright, nor the streams of blood so deep, nor the cries of innocence so loud. In particular, 1. If God be sovereign, all under-sovereigns are not to rule against him, but to be obedient to his orders. If they rule by his authority, Proverbs 8:15, they are not to rule against his interests. They are not to imagine themselves as absolute as God, and that their laws must be a sovereign authority against his honour, as the divine are for it. If they are his lieutenants on earth, they ought to act according to his orders. No man but will account a governor of a province a rebel if he will disobey the orders sent to him by the sovereign prince that commissioned him. Rebellion against God is a crime of princes, as well as rebellion against princes, a crime of subjects. Saul is charged with it by Samuel in a high manner for an act of simple disobedience, though intended for the service of God and the enriching his country with the spoils of the Amalekites. Rebellion is as the sin of witchcraft, 1 Samuel 15:23. Like witchcraft, or covenanting with the devil, acting as if he had received his commission, not from God, but from Satan. Magistrates, as commissioned by God, ought to act for him. Doth human authority ever give a commission to any to rebel against itself? Did God ever depute any earthly sovereignty against his glory, and give them leave to outlaw his laws? To introduce their own? No. When he gave the vicarious dominion to Christ, He calls upon the kings of the earth to be instructed and be wise and kiss the Son. Psalm 2:10-12, i.e. to observe his orders and pay him homage as their governor. What a silly, doltish thing is it to resist that supreme authority to which the archangels submit themselves and regulate their employments punctually by their instructions. Those excellent creatures exactly obey him in all acts of their subordinate government in the world, those in whose hand the greatest monarch is no more than a silly fly between the fingers of a giant. A contradiction to the interest of God have been fatal to kings. The four monarchies have had their wings clipped, and most of them have been buried in their own ashes. They have all, like the imitators of Lucifer's pride, fallen from the heaven of their glory to the depths of their shame and misery. All governors are bound to be as much obedient to God as their subjects are bound to be submissive to them. Their authority over men is limited. God's authority over them is absolute and unbounded. Though every soul ought to be subject to the higher powers, yet there is a higher power of all, to which those higher powers are to subject themselves. They are to be keepers of both the tables of the law of God, and are then most sovereigns when they set in their own practice an example of obedience to God for their subjects to write after. This Reformation audio resource is a production of Stillwater's Revival Books. Many free resources, as well as our complete mail order catalogue containing classic and contemporary Puritan and Reformed books, CDs and much more at great discounts, are on the web at www.swrb.com. We can also be reached by email at swrb@swrb.com, by phone at 780-450-3730, by fax at 780-468-1096, or by mail at 4710-37A Avenue, Edmonton, AB, Canada, T6L3T5. If you do not have a web connection, please request a free printed catalogue. If you do have a web connection and would like to be added to our email list, please send an email to ad@swrb.com or swrb@swrb.com with the word ad in the subject line. SWRB's email list is a double opt-in list, so once you've sent us your email address, you'll be asked by email to confirm that you want to join our list using the email address you have supplied. Your email information will be kept confidential, and you can easily remove yourself from our email list by simply emailing us at swrb@swrb.com with the word remove in the subject line. Once you are on our email list, you will be alerted to all the new free Reformation resources, free MP3s, free electronic books and texts, etc. SWRB makes available on the web, as well as at times to our best discounts and super specials. We also encourage you to reproduce this audio resource and to pass it on to your friends, but we only authorize this as long as the full contents of the message, including the header and trailer, is not altered in any way, and as long as the audio file or cassette is given away for free. Thank you again for listening to this SWRB reading, and remember that Isaiah 26:3 states, "I will keep him in perfect peace, whose mind is stayed on thee, because he trusteth in thee." 2 Corinthians 13:11 concludes, "Finally, brethren, farewell. Be perfect, be of good comfort, be of one mind, live in peace. And the God of love and peace shall be with you."